Oh, my God, Meyer, why are you making that sound? Are you okay?
I'm just in labor.
What?
Oh, Meyer, I thought you weren't due for another 3 Zorplax.
Another 3 what?
No, it's fine. It's gonna be a blocking baby.
Oh, well, you know, I read a book about delivering blocking babies. You know, apparently their foreclaws are horribly underdeveloped. You might wanna go to a Keplakian expert.
What are you guys talking about? What the hell is a Keplakian?
No, I'm going to the facility on the moons of Draganian, so they're experts at this.
Oh yeah, what? Yeah. The Draganians are definitely the people to go to.
What the hell are you guys talking about?
But you know, you're going to need some kind of a food source for the baby to devour with its tentacles. So, who are you bringing along for it to eat?
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Hey, Eric.
Welcome to Ragnarok, your home of the Nerdpocalypse.
Hey everybody, welcome to Ragnarok, episode 13, The Rise of Indie Games, or The Chasm of Lord Zardak.
You know, not many people buy chasms as real estate. I'm kind of surprised Lord Zardak made that investment.
He's an innovator.
Well, you know, I for one find his plan to build tract housing at the bottom of a chasm, you know, it's kind of innovative.
I don't think the gardening is going to be very good down there.
No.
Mm. When you're a lord, you can, you know, you can be eccentric, though.
It's a project house, really.
Yeah, but I mean, it's affordable, so that's good. We need more affordable housing. So,
in this economy.
Yeah. I'm Eric.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Alex.
And I made a sound.
Meyer makes sounds, yes.
And unfortunately, Ed couldn't join us today because he was a little busy. He's still 2 women,
yeah,
which is kind of perplexing.
They're having a bit of a conflict.
Yeah, external. Yeah, Twilight came out, and one of them's Team Edward, the other one's Team Jacob.
Right? It's just a mess.
And they're just fighting each other.
Yeah.
So.
We tried to get them to reconcile their differences because they had to do a special fusion dance in order to merge back into Ed. But with the Team Edward, Team Jacob thing, it's just not going to happen for a while.
No, not for a while.
Yeah.
He's in a confusing place right now. Both of them.
Yeah. Each of half her. Of him. Both half of her. Him. It also makes the pronouns really weird.
Ah, yeah. I try to say her, but make it sound like I have an I in the her instead, so it's like it, her.
I was kind of saying herm.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
You know what doesn't confuse me? Video games.
Oh, yeah, video games never confuse me.
Really? Then you're playing some of the bad video games.
I do play pretty bad video games.
There have been some bad video games coming out recently. A lot of them have been under, you know, the usual licenses that we're used to. But what we want to talk about right now, we want to talk about the rise of indie gaming. More independent gaming, not just the usual same IP over and over again. We want to see a rise of indie gaming, which is pretty much exactly what we're seeing right now, isn't
right.
it?
Well, I think it's also important to point out that by IP we mean intellectual property, for those of you who don't know.
And sorry, I just like starting with acronyms and not explaining them.
Yeah, but I mean, going back to having played some bad games, I mean, it's not necessarily bad, but there are a lot of what comes out these days, especially this holiday season, is a severe lack of new IPs.
Right, the major labels are going back to their tried and true games
right.
and game franchises.
Like you have GoldenEye Reloaded, which is an upscaling of a remake of the original game from like 10 years ago. It's not really, I mean, the story's a little different, but still, it's not.
It's a remake of a remake.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of excited to play that one because I tried the version that they came out with for the Wii, and that was terrible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to see what they'll do with it on the 360.
And you have Sonic Generations, which is, you know, I understand that they're going back to their roots, but Sonic games have been so bad lately that they didn't even try to do anything new. They just redid old things.
I think they did do a good job of it, though, I gotta say.
I'm not commenting on the quality of it.
Right.
I'm just saying it's not a new idea. It's all the old ideas they had that seemed to work in one thing.
I miss it.
And some that didn't, because there was a level from Sonic Unleashed. Sorry, spoilers.
I like Fat Sonic. I liked when video game characters were fat, like Mario.
He's still chubby.
Well, he's still a little chubby, yeah. But when then they made Sonic all like anime looking, and I was like, oh yeah, he's fat again. I like him.
When you get more bits, you lose more weight.
There's also, you know, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, which is just the third game in Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
But there have been lots of other Calls of Duty. Call of Duties?
That sounds right. Calls of Duty.
Calls of Duty.
I like Calls of Duty better.
Call of Duties.
Call of Duty and Battlefield is the same game, right? Troll face.
Let the flaming begin.
Let the flames begin.
And last week we had the big one, Elder Scrolls V.
Right.
Came out.
Skyrim. And Super Mario 3D Land is coming out, and God knows what Mario game that is.
Well, it's coming out on the same day as another Mario game, Mario and Sonic at the London Olympics, because we all know how big a hit the last one was.
Right.
Well, it's because Nintendo is like the biggest offender of putting out the same shit over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the times, like with the Mario games and Zelda games and Metroid and everything, they change them up.
Right.
And they make them really good. I mean, those are great games when they come out.
Like Skyward Sword, which I believe just came out today?
Or, no.
The day of recording?
No, it's coming out Sunday.
Oh, well, because my friend I was talking to is in England. He was playing it today. Okay.
Well, your friend is a jackass.
Hey,
no
he's
offense
English.
To our English viewers. I'm sorry, he's a bloody idiot.
That's good. That's better. He's a...
Yeah.
He's and, a wanker. He's a wanker.
And Assassin's Creed Revelations, which, while I'm loving it, is the third game in as many years for Assassin's Creed.
Because right. Wasn't there such a big gap between 1 and 2?
It was 2 or 3. It was 2 or 3. It was like normal development cycle. 2 or 3 years.
And let's also not forget Halo Combat Evolved Anniversary, which isn't even releasing a new game. It's releasing the exact game that started the series.
But this one has a button that makes the graphics look nice.
Oh, all right.
Well, you can also press it and make them go back to the old graphics.
Because I buy new games to play the old game.
But you did buy Halo.
Yeah. That was not a sarcastic statement.
Oh.
He likes Master Chief.
And don't forget the 18th Need for Speed title, The Run.
Yeah.
Most
of us did forget it.
Yeah, the 18th title in the franchise.
Because God knows, when everyone thinks 18 games, they think Need for Speed.
I was like, oh yeah, I think we need a franchise that has 18 games. Oh, Need for Speed.
So what we're saying, every game, which I think we just pointed out, not every game, but most games coming out are just remakes and sequels. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that those are a bad thing. It's just that sometimes it gets boring and repetitive when gamers and people want new ideas and new IPs from time to time. I love certain franchises, but it just isn't enough anymore.
You know, like we said, it was like Assassin's Creed, like Mario, like Zelda. Right. It's just, we like breath of fresh air. Like when Bioshock came out, it was like, this is new and fresh. Like, oh, yes.
And then Bioshock 2 came out.
Which was like opening the door to Rapture after 50 years and just kind of like, ugh.
Well, I think
Bioshock 2.
I didn't dislike it. I just thought it wasn't as good as the first one.
Yeah.
It definitely had the same atmosphere, but
yeah.
I don't know. It was like they took the most annoying part of the game
and made
an entire game out of it. But anyway, as I was going to say, one of the reasons I think that some of the bigger game developers are hesitant to develop new properties is that they have to invest millions of dollars to develop a game. And
that's expensive.
They're hesitant to put all of that time and money, and effort into developing something that's untested.
Right. And though, we're complaining about, the lack of new IPs, we're still buying them. I bought Assassin's Creed Revelations.
I bought Halo. I bought Sonic Generations.
Yep. Because they know they can make money off of them. So they're going to keep spitting them out.
What I look for in games is games that are, feel fresh and they do something new that's like, oh, this is awesome. Like when Limbo came out, it was Limbo is just the atmosphere of the game. It was dark and scary.
Well, the atmosphere of the game kind of is the entirety of the game.
And it's one of those games where, you play as a little boy, and I was just like, I felt so bad every time I killed a boy. I was like, oh, because he feels so fragile.
And it's such violent deaths.
It's like, oh my, and you just want to just, little boy, it's all right. Be safe. It's okay.
This isn't one of your little superhero characters that you get in games. This is a kid.
It's not Master Chief.
Right. But it was a very just nice, different artistic game. Like Braid. I loved Braid. I was a huge fan of that game.
See, I love the art of Braid. I was not a fan of the game itself.
No?
No, I don't know. It just didn't do it for me.
I like the concept of getting the puzzle pieces and then that tells you this kind of the story.
They tried a lot of different things with Braid, which I that the first time I played and I put together one of the puzzles, and then I realized that you had to use the platform in the puzzle as a platform in the level.
Yeah.
That was just, I just thought it was trying some new things, and I think it did a good job with it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of kind of trying new things, you know, the indie darling is Minecraft.
Oh, Minecraft is such a fun game.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's funny because it's not really, like, anything. Like, you know, the newest update, you know, they just released Minecraft, you know, just released Minecraft, which right, adds, yeah. I think it adds quests and adds leveling and things like that. But before that, I mean, it wasn't really anything.
It was the epitome of a sandbox game. You could just create a world and go anywhere.
You could create a sandbox.
Right. build whatever you want, fight exploding green cocks.
Oh,
and
I hate fucking creepers.
Yeah, it's official game on that too.
What?
It's official now. It's not in beta or anything.
Yeah, no, it was officially released, and it's fantastic.
Like, Minecon was this weekend.
Yeah. It's today. Or is tomorrow?
It's the weekend.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's Castle Crashers, which is another fantastic indie game.
Yeah, I think Castle Crashers really impressed me with its art style and its sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was that one level where you were fighting your way through the forest, and you would just see all these little woodland creatures shitting. In the background shitting themselves. And you're like, oh god, why are all these creatures pooping? And then you find out why.
I like when you go on the deer running away from the thing that they shit, and it's a shit, the deer also just shits. The team who makes them, but they did Alien Hominid stuff.
Team Behemoth.
Yeah, again, they make pretty awesome games.
Well, speaking of teams, you have Team Meat that made Super Meat Boy, which we all played the shit out of.
Oh, yeah,
got
so
together
much.
On evenings and just passed back and forth.
Because, I mean, it really is a basic concept. You know, those games aren't anything new. You get from the start to the finish and avoid the traps along the way. But the way Super Meat Boy did it was just so much fun. And it had humor. It had some semblance of a story.
Super difficult.
Oh, yeah.
Very much.
Yeah.
That's what kind of got me. I was like, oh, I gotta... It's like, this is fucking hard, but I gotta get through this.
Yeah.
And then seeing all your deaths.
Yeah, after. Just watching the replay.
Yeah.
Was one of the best parts.
Definitely.
I agree. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what the thing that all these games have in common is digital distribution, which I think is really the future of game distribution.
It makes sense. The way they're doing this, they don't have to pay to actually give you a copy of the game.
Right.
Like, you don't need a disc, you don't need a cartridge, you don't need anything. You just have it. You download it and you have it.
Right. Yeah. And it makes it easier for the consumer because you don't have to leave to go get it.
Right.
It also eliminates the problem of getting faulty discs or cartridges way back when.
Yeah.
You know, if you download the file and it doesn't work, you can download it again.
Yeah.
And then it also is good for the people who make it, the games, because developers... You know, who they would normally probably receive like maybe 17% if they sold like for retail copies, but getting like, you know, through digital distribution, they get like maybe around 85% of
the
profit.
That's a big difference. But I mean, it also works out because it helps the consumer because the digital releases tend to be a little cheaper. Like if you look at a game on Steam versus the same game on Xbox, you know, the disc for Xbox and PS3 is usually like $60. And Steam is 50. I mean, it's not a huge difference, but every little bit helps.
Right, little bits taken off of it, just, you know, save your wallet in this recession we have going on.
Right. Well, I mean, if you get 6 games a year, then you would have saved enough money to get another game.
There you go.
I think it's also pretty cool. Steam, you know, will run a special sometimes, and they'll have games for ridiculously cheap and even free, like Team Fortress 2 is free.
Yeah.
It's also pretty cool. One of the other things I've noticed is, rather than, you know, huge companies with, you know, staffs of hundreds of people developing these games, we're noticing, sort of a return to the earlier days of video game programming where you'd only have, like, a couple of people working on a game.
Right.
Digital distribution, gives us independent game developers an outlet for their work. You know, so they don't have to spend the money to have the cartridges produced.
Right.
You
know, you still have your EAs and your Activisions making
big
games, but then you have something like Minecraft, which one guy made and just put out on the internet.
Notch.
Yeah, Notch made it, and he's like, and then he put it up on the internet, and it just took off.
That Swedish bastard.
And he was making millions of dollars before the game even got out of alpha.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's by himself making the game, you know.
Yeah, but then he's just able to use that money to make the game better. But, like, the point is that, you know, and then you have larger digital outlets, too, like Steam and Xbox Live Arcade, which give slightly larger developers, you know, a chance to showcase their work where people will see it.
Yeah, they'll often have, like, little promotions to try to get these games out there. Like, I've been following recently the Humble Indie Bundle promotion, where basically you get maybe, like, 4 or 5 games put in a bundle, and you could pay absolutely any price you want for them.
Right.
Like, you could pay $1, you could pay $50, and some of the money goes to charity and stuff, which I think is a really nice little cause they got there.
And I know what they've usually done is if you pay at or above what the average price is, you get another, like, you get another game
or something. Some kind of a freebie.
Yeah.
Cool.
You know, being independent, developers, you know, don't have restrictions or limitations or, you know, require approval from the publisher like mainstream titles do.
Right.
I mean, you know, maybe they'll, you know, they have limitations to the budget, but that's basically it.
Well, yeah, I mean, but what that means then is that indie developers can be a lot more innovative and creative and experimental. Yeah. Like, you know, we were talking about Limbo. That probably wouldn't have come out of EA. No. You know, they wouldn't have taken the risk on something like that. I mean, as a larger game.
Yeah. And that's why...
it's just what... it was too avant-garde.
Yeah, and it leads to more interesting games.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And it also allows the games to sort of build a player base before they even officially release. Like, as I mentioned before, Minecraft and Dwarf Fortress became really big before they even... You know, like, Minecraft has been big for a year. They just officially released today.
Yeah.
Dwarf Fortress has been big for a couple of years, and I think they're still in alpha or beta development.
I mean, Minecraft has sold nearly 4.1 million copies, and it just officially released today.
You probably also get, you know, feedback from the players and say, you know, what they want from the game and change it and make the game even better.
Right. See, it's just, like, crazy that they get that many sales because Minecraft, Dwarf Fortress, like, indie titles like that, they go and get these sales despite not even having a big advertising campaign behind them.
Yeah.
Like, EA will spend tons and tons of dollars, or any other company will spend all this money to advertise a game, and then it'll sell kind of crappy still.
Like, right. How many Modern Warfare 3 ads have you seen on TV?
Oh.
1 million.
They promote their games online, on TV, at cons, and, you know, word of mouth was probably the biggest factor, you know, that I know of that contributed to Minecraft's success. I mean, I heard of Minecraft when Penny Arcade did a couple of strips about it.
Right.
And I was like, that sounds really cool. I would like to check this game out.
Although, in all fairness, I do think they're probably promoting Minecraft at MineCon. A bit.
Well, that was that. You know, this is now. That was back. You know,
I know,
year,
I was,
year
I was
and
being
a half
sarcastic.
Ago.
Were you?
Yeah, yeah. I was being facetious. See, the whole conceit of what I was saying was that, of course, they're promoting Minecraft at the convention dedicated to Minecraft.
I still don't get it.
I'll explain it to you later.
Okay.
It's a bit of a complicated
thing. Yeah.
and Dwarf Fortress. I first heard of it because some guys from Something Awful did a Dwarf Fortress Let's Play called Boat Murdered, you know, where they basically created a fortress and they passed it around each week from person to person, and they made like a little journal of what happened during each one of their reigns over Boat Murdered, and apparently they got overrun by elephants quite a bit.
These things happen.
Yeah, it's a common problem you have to deal with in everyday life.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure I heard about Minecraft from Ryan when he was talking about it.
Talk
about buying it. But I didn't really get into it as much until I watched this web show called Awesome Video Games, where, you know, they have their own server and, you know, they do huge Minecraft builds. And, like, it made me into a huge fan of Minecraft, but I've never played the game. And, you know, just because watching these, like, shows and, you know, hearing about it, it's like,
yeah. Well, that was how, after I saw the Penny Arcade, you know, strips, I wanted to know what it was. So the first place that I went to was YouTube to find the Let's Plays. And that's really what convinced me to buy the game.
Definitely. And I think these days, you know, something that I've just recently discovered, I know it's not really new, but Kickstarter gives small developers a chance to solicit funding from the general public. Like, you know, one of the games that we didn't really mention earlier, but I really liked, was called Cthulhu Saves the World, which is like a fun take on an RPG where Cthulhu has to save the world in order to get his powers back so he can destroy the world. And that was funded through Kickstarter. And then, you know, it allows fans to fund games that they think they'll enjoy and want to see made.
Well, and that's not just a video game thing. You know, there are movies that are being funded Kickstarter and books.
Comics, books, art projects. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, honestly, if you guys get some downtime, after I remembered Kickstarter and I made some notes about it for the show, and then I went and spent an hour just looking through all the things there, and I'm like, I want to give money to everyone here, but I can't because I'm broke.
Don't they usually give you something like some sort of reward?
Yeah, like for the video games, usually like if they'll be digitally distributed because they're small indie companies.
Right.
So, you know, if you donate X amount, like $25 or $30, you'll get a copy of the game when it comes out. And, you know, usually they'll say any amount, you'll get like a thanks in it, whatever it is, you'll get some sort of thanks. But, you know, the more you give, the better your reward is, almost. And then they have goals that they set up in a certain amount of time to do. Like, you know, I need to raise $8,000 by December 31st to get this done.
Usually they'll have like a base amount, and then anything over that is gravy.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of good ideas. So where do we think gaming is going in the future, you guys?
Like we're saying, I think, you know, by the next console generation, I think discs are going to be pretty much gone.
Who's going to miss them?
Yeah, well, I know. I don't really miss cartridges.
Eric's going to miss them.
I'm going to miss them hard. Just like I miss my cartridges.
But then you'll have your hard drive.
Oh, you are a wordsmith, sir.
Yes, I am. Yeah, but what were you saying about your cartridges?
I miss them a lot.
Oh, okay. And, you know, like we say, digital distribution will be great. And, you know, when you look at Xbox Live Arcade, they have the rating systems that helps, you know, tells you everyone rates it. You know, you give it like 1 to 5 stars. And that can help people, you know, with quick feedback and let gamers know, you know, what games are good and what games are bad. You won't even have to leave your house.
It works for lazy people like me.
Exactly.
And, you know, as your internet connections get faster and faster and, you know, storage gets cheaper and cheaper and, you know, continues to grow exponentially, it can only be easier to distribute games online.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, through computers, too. You can always do it there.
Mm. You know, well, you know, people, I feel like, you know, people compare mainstream video games to mainstream movies.
Yeah, these days.
You know, in the same light, I would compare indie movies to indie games.
Right.
You know, you know, I don't really think we'll see anything major happening with games, like, but
3D,
4D,
motion control.
Yeah,
you know, I see a lot of more of that stuff, and
I want to see games that massage your balls. That would be a good game.
No. That would be a weird game.
Yeah. They have some Xbox indie titles that just make your controller vibrate.
There you go, Ryan.
There you go.
It looks like the future is here.
Sit on that controller.
A sex video game. Mm-hmm. Vagina controller.
Vagina Wars?
Yeah.
Fund it.
Guys, I have to go to Kickstarter. I'll be right back.
Get some haptics in that motherfucker.
But, you know, maybe once in a while, you know, a game might come out that, you know, breaks the mold of gaming as we know it and, you know, change the way we see gaming. Kind of like, you know, Citizen Kane did for movies. But those games will be, you know, few and far between.
Yeah. How many Citizen Kanes have there been?
Several?
One.
That's the correct answer. You sure there wasn't any sequels?
No, there was Citizen Kane.
Okay.
And that was it.
How Citizen Kane got his groove back?
No, that was... Oh, no. Guys, I'll be right back. That's a good Kickstarter.
So changes I do see happening are product placement, advertisement in games,
which already happens. Well, yeah, so this is going to be even more of it,
you know. But you know, I expect so much. Like,
I mean, that kind of goes back to the cost of making games now. It helps mitigate that for the big developers because, you know, Coke will say, "Oh, I'll give you $2 million if you feature a Coke in your game," and they'll be like, "Yeah, sure, that's $2 million less we have to spend."
Yeah. Well, I think also the public's outlook of gaming is going to change. The average gamer is like about is now like about 30 years old.
Yeah, their demographic is definitely getting older. Yeah. So
it's changed a lot from when everyone was just like, oh, only little kids play video games.
Yeah.
Now,
well, that's because those little kids grew up.
Yeah, right. Now those little kids are 35 years old and have disposable income, or at least a lot more than they used to.
Yeah. So now we're going to probably definitely see more games, you know, for that accommodate that.
Well, I think we're already seeing that because the people who are developing games now have grown up with it.
Yeah.
Like, the people who are working with it have been playing games their whole lives. It's not like... I don't want to say they're not forging new ground, because they are, but it's not like the Atari, the 2600, or the NES, where, you know, it's kind of like brand spanking new. Like, no one really knew what to make of it. People have video games now, and now it's, like we said earlier, it's coming into an art form. So we're going to see a lot more, I think, refinement of it.
Well, and also, we're also reaching back. Because video games, they're sort of developing as a visual medium and as a platform for storytelling, becoming a serious art form. And a lot of developers are looking back to the styles of play that we don't see very much anymore. You know, using like 8 and 16-bit graphics or different play styles that haven't been around for like 10 or 20 years, like The Binding of Isaac.
Wonderful game, by the way.
You know, top-down dungeon crawler. Terraria, which is sort of a 16-bit, I think, side-scroller, you know, kind of a knockoff of Minecraft. I haven't actually played. but, you know, these independent companies, by using a simpler style that's more pared down, they can, you know, they can do more with less. They can create expansive stories and immersive worlds economically. And I think more indie developers are going to start taking advantage of that.
Right.
They have already.
The other thing I think we're going to see a lot more of is like what Ryan was saying. The graphics don't always matter as much if you have a really great story to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other thing we're going to get is a lot more casual gaming that doesn't have a story. You know, Angry Birds is as, if not more popular than Minecraft.
I'm pretty sure like everyone I know almost has some form of Angry Birds.
Right.
Like, my sister barely plays video games at all, and she's like, oh, I've been playing Angry Birds so much.
Everybody plays Angry Birds.
My mom plays Angry Birds.
Right.
And then there's so much different versions of Angry Birds, too, right?
Yeah. They have, like, Angry Birds Seasons and regular Angry Birds and Angry Birds Rio. So I think there's going to be a lot more of that, you know, like, Plants vs. Zombies. Like, because mobile... Honestly, I think handheld gaming systems are going to go the way of the Dota.
Yeah.
Because phones are getting more and more powerful. I mean, think about what your iPhone 4 can do.
Right.
Compared to what computers could do like 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Your iPhone 4 can talk to you.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, those are going to be the mobile gaming platforms.
If you hit on your iPhone 4, it can shoot you down.
You know, and personally, I'd be okay with spending, you know, $15 for a phone game. As long as it's good.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then you have Angry Birds, which is like 99 cents. So why the hell not?
Yeah.
Phones, tablets. I think even maybe at some point, they go on our television. We'd be like, oh, we'll play a game. And that, you know, there's a game on the TV.
Aren't they already doing that? I remember seeing commercials about like being able to play Bejeweled on your...
I think because they have like Google
Vision,
TV.
Cablevision does it, and Fios does it too, because the Fios guy... we just switched over to Fios, and the guy who installed it was showing us how you can order games.
Yeah, I mean, it's like simple things, but you know, you're not going to get Assassin's Creed straight to your TV anytime soon.
Yeah.
Maybe one day.
Maybe.
But, you know, for right now, things like Angry Birds.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Go for it.
I said the more people who start gaming, the more accepted it's going to be.
If you have some mean pigs, just throw a bird at them.
That's how you do it. Hopefully it's an exploding bird.
Mm. All right, so that about brings our discussion about the rise of indie games to a conclusion. If you feel we've missed anything, if you'd like to contribute to our discussion, feel free to hit us up in the usual place. You can comment on the website.
Not in the back alley.
Oh, no. We don't
not
like
that
it
usual
catch
place.
Up with us there. No.
You can still meet me there.
I've taken to carrying a knife whenever I walk through there.
I met some nice people in the back alley.
Ryan, remember when you actually
hanging out with drug dealers again?
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
There are people too, Alex.
We're going to have a talk when we're done.
No, we will not.
We're going to talk about Stranger Danger.
No, we will not.
All right, we'll see.
No.
So we'll be right back in a few seconds after this.
Yes. Meyer and I have to have a talk.
No. All right. No. Take Meyer in the other room.
No.
Okay. Just make sure he knows his candy. Address and his phone number.
Candy?
I have candy.
No.
Meyer want a candy?
Yes.
Does Meyer want a candy?
Yes.
All right, come on, Meyer. You can have a candy.
Yeah.
But first, we have to talk about Stranger Danger.
What? No.
Candy. All that happens.
All that happens.
I'm so confused.
This was a great minute of...
We're going to be right back.
Shut your beard up.
With some comics pitches.
Candy.
Ooh.
Hope you enjoyed our last segment.
Woo! I sure didn't.
All right, so with our second segment of our show here today, we had an idea. We read a lot of web comics around our group here.
I read three.
I read a whole bunch.
Me twos.
Me fours.
Four. I read four regularly.
And as a bunch of people who enjoy web comics, we figured we had an idea of trying to pitch our own ideas for web comics to you, our loyal listeners. And see which one of these different ideas you'd enjoy the most. We're going to actually try to put whichever one is the winning one up on our website, try to put some work into it, and get it going. And since we like our listeners so much, we wanted each one of them to include a little bit of a choose-your-own-adventure style to them, to see exactly where you want our story to go. So right. You're not only picking which story you want to see, you're picking how that story will play out. Which I think is really nice. Because
hopefully you won't
guys.
Kill the main character right away.
Hopefully not.
It will be a short-lived project. A
very, very short-lived webcomic.
Oh, then we can just get a new main character.
Yeah, so...
The main character walks in and he dies.
All right.
Credits.
So the new main character comes in and he sees a dead body and then he dies.
So we're going to read our pitches now. And
yep.
I will put a poll up on the website. You guys will have a couple of weeks, probably about a month, to vote. Episode 15 to vote on which idea you would like to see happen in 2012, and we will announce the results end of episode 15 or episode 16.
Yeah, whatever we post.
Whatever we damn well feel like.
Can there be an Ed choice and he just blank?
I don't want to sway the votes towards nothing.
Oh, okay.
So what happens if the Ed choice wins? We would just do nothing.
That would be very
disappointing. Oh, he's a mystery. Question mark.
Mystery choice.
It's a mystery choice.
Why don't we stick with the
I got it.
I was gonna say pledges. Pitches.
Pitches
that we're all going to...
I was going to say, Ed is already writing a dramatic storyline for us.
He's got his thing.
But not a choose-your-own-adventure, so he sucks.
Or is it...
I don't think it is.
We don't know who the killer is yet.
Oh, I know.
Shh.
Bum, bum, bum.
All right,
so Eric, why don't you... You had an interesting idea for a pitch.
Thank you.
I would like to hear more. So why don't you introduce your comic idea?
Well, basically, the idea I had for my own... It was actually an idea that I wanted to try to write up as a script for like a cartoon, even despite the fact that I can't draw for my life. But it was called Space Ninja in the World of Today. Basically, we followed the main character, the Space Ninja, who's been thrust backwards in time from his super cool, amazing, lots of technology, but there's a war going on future, into just today. So basically, you'd have this superhero character. It's kind of like an off-the-wall type thing. I pictured it as if it was a cartoon, it would actually be something on Adult Swim. Just like some strange character with all these bizarre mannerisms. Like, for instance, his weapon is kind of like a lightsaber, but it's a hammer. Because that makes a lot of sense.
Is the hammer his penis?
I mean, that wasn't part of the plan, but if it's chosen and that's where the viewers want us to go,
Myra's making a reference. Just keep going.
I don't want to keep going now. I'm offended by your reference.
Dr.
Horrible.
So, basically, it'd be this super character from the future with all these abilities trying to adjust to a regular life in our current time. Like, he just... I pictured the first arc just being him getting an apartment with some regular guy who eventually gets annoyed by all of his bizarre behaviors and such.
So it's kind of like backwards Samurai Jack.
Yes. That's actually...
Exactly what it is. Kind of.
I was thinking that when I was coming up with the idea, actually.
He wouldn't be fighting, like, contemporary villains. He would just be adjusting to regular life and, like, getting a job, you know, standing in line at the post office or the DMV or, you know, walking his dog in the park.
Yeah, just typical things like that. Although I could see maybe a villain from the future making his way back somehow if we needed some big battle or something, if that's what the listeners and then viewers would like to see.
He would hang out with Occupy Wall Street people. Just hang out in tents.
Well, they cleaned out Zuccotti Park.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, they rounded him up. Kicked him out.
Get out of here, you hippies.
Yeah, I'm sure someone said that.
Yeah, it was probably not me.
Nope. So, anyone else have any... So, that's okay. I really don't even know what to ask.
That's a pitch. And it's pretty good. My pitch, on the other hand, is awesome.
Well, tell us more.
Let's hear it.
Well, my idea is... It's like a fantasy realm, but it's full of idiots and, you know, all around terrible people. And, you know, I don't picture this as like an overarching, you know, storyline like regular, like most comics. Just like mini stories that follow like certain individuals. And you know, sometimes the characters' paths will, you know, cross one another. Like, I'm thinking it's something along the same lines as like Pulp Fiction was. It's the webcomic would be, you know, funny and weird, and you know, it's just something for people, you know, to read from time to time and not worry about if they miss a comic or two.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, like mostly the main draw is the weird characters, and some ideas I had were like, you know, a hero who's, you know, tired of saving the princess over and over again. And a knight who kills a dragon, but then realizes that the dragon had a wife and kids and a family, so he decides, oh, crap, I gotta take care of them, because now they don't have a provider. Or, you know, maybe like a person who's looking for a fountain of youth, but then keeps coming across other magical fountains instead. there's plenty more ideas for this, you know. But I picture the view of participation comes from seeing which characters they want to see in the story at that point. And, it's a very general open premise, but, you know, I think it allows for us to be really creative and, you know, room to grow to be a fun, you know.
So they wouldn't be able to continue choosing one story throughout. They would stop and start different stories.
Yeah. Like, you know, if they want to say, oh, you know, I want to see what the Fountain of Youth guy is doing at this point. It's, you know, let's
all right.
Go
so
back
basically,
to his story.
The choose your own adventure part would work. Like, we would introduce a whole bunch of characters,
yeah.
And then they would get to pick who they focus on, who the next strip focuses on.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
I gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Sorry, let me start that over. I'm very articulate. Meyer and Eric's ideas were both sort of in the silly, funny kind of vein, but Alex and I have more serious, dramatic storylines to propose.
That's something about our demeanors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My story is actually called Morality Play, and the plot of it is, in the near future, when sensory immersion games have become the latest craze, an FBI agent who goes by the gamer tag Manny K has to infiltrate a notorious sensory MMO that has been turning its players into drooling vegetables. The game kind of attracts people who are trying to, you know, they're looking for thrills. They want to put themselves to the ultimate test. And it's basically a noir murder mystery that sort of auto-generates a story and parts for its players to play. So you'd basically take like a whole bunch of random elements and stick them together somehow to be a murder mystery. And I figured that could provide at least some humor. The murder mystery is a randomly generated thing that doesn't really make sense, and they have to navigate it somehow. The game is dangerous because it channels hard feedback, you know, so it whatever happens to you in the game, you feel it. It doesn't mute any of the, you know, pain or other severe sensory experiences.
Like the holodeck with the safety off.
Right. Which, you know, because you're basically plugging your brain into this, can result in nerve damage and brain death. And the big draw of it is the central morality mechanic. Basically, every time one of the players in the game makes a choice, the game gauges it against a database of pre-programmed human behaviors to determine whether it was a moral choice or not, and it channels feedback to you appropriately. So if you make too many choices that the game considers immoral, the game world begins to take on like a more sinister tone, and if you're really a bad character, it becomes eventually sort of like a living hell that you inhabit. The main character, Manny's task would be to learn the identity of the game's mysterious overseer, the person who created the game and is like hosting these sessions and, you know, basically turning people into vegetables, because his game is so difficult to navigate without losing your mind. The overseer may or may not be an actual person. They don't know if it's like a rogue AI or some guy. So the main thrust of the comic would be to figure out who this person is and why they're doing this. And he has to do this without losing his mind and, you know, getting stuck in a digital hell of his own making.
kind of reminds me a little bit of The Surrogates.
Yeah, I can kind of see that a little bit.
A little bit.
I've never seen that.
Don't.
Well, the comic's good, though.
The comic's good, yeah. You should read it, but don't see it. Actually, you know what? The movie wasn't too bad. Yeah, just wasn't as good as the comic.
Just read the comic.
Is that Gamer, where the criminals are in controlled by the gamers?
Oh, I think that's Gamer. That's Gamer. Yeah. Yeah. And Surrogates, people, instead of going out in the real world, they control robotic
versions,
well, almost like avatars that go out, and so everyone has a robot.
Yeah.
That's the one with Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah. I've seen the trailer for that. I've never actually seen.
And then Wanda just kills them.
Yeah.
Well, this would be, you know, instead of having people inhabiting robot bodies, this would be like a fully digital world.
Like VNet from Caprica.
Yeah. Kind of. Almost.
That's cool.
Interesting.
How are people going to choose? Like, they're going to choose. What's the viewers' choices?
The viewers' choices, I would think, would be we would present Manny with some kind of a moral dilemma that he has to try to choose the higher ground or the lesser of two evils, and, you know, if he chooses the easy way, as I said, it'll have consequences for him later on. I was thinking, you know, like the art style could actually change to reflect the game getting more sinister. And
so the viewers would be his moral compass, pretty much.
Paragon or Renegade.
Basically. Exactly. It would be like playing Mass Effect, but very, very slowly.
Mass Effect sometimes takes it very slowly.
Yeah.
because I'm very slow at playing it.
It takes 2 weeks to press the button.
I need to ponder this choice. I'll be back, game. I'll be back.
It's like, oh, save the council or say, don't save the council.
All right, so my pitch, and the idea I came up with for my comic was a little more open-ended. I don't have a title for it yet, but my idea was that the story would follow an alien who crash lands on Earth. His ship crashes, and he doesn't really look too human. I wouldn't say he looks quite so much like, you know, the grays with the big eyes and the huge heads, but he's not just a Vulcan either, where he could just wear a long hat to cover up his pointy ears and no one's going to know the difference. Mm-hmm. And so now the whole comic would be him, you know, trying to hide or doing his best to blend in and just survive on Earth. So, I mean, I pictured it as more of a serious and dramatic story, but the reason it's so open is that the whole thing would really come from the choices that the viewers make. You know, the end of each strip would be giving the viewers and the readers the choice for what the alien's next action will be.
Okay.
So I kind of pictured, you know, the first strip, his ship crashes, and at the end, does he run away? Does he try to salvage parts? Or, you know, does he stick around and hope, you know, he can get a distress signal or something?
Right.
And then obviously that would determine what happens, because someone could come and find him, or if he runs away, he wouldn't have any stuff. So it was much more open-ended about this alien trying to survive on Earth.
And what would you say his ultimate goal would be? Getting off of Earth or blending in?
Well, I think honestly that would depend on the initial choice.
Okay.
Like, you know, if he just, you know, sets the self-destruct on his spaceship and blows it up because he crash-landed, well, then his goal is going to be just to blend in and hope no one notices him. But right. If there's a way he can try to get home, obviously that's probably what he's going to want to do.
I would like to suggest that we should have a storyline possible where he takes over the world.
I think that would be, you know, that would depend on the readers, but that's definitely a possibility.
I kind of want a storyline where he wants to impregnate a human being.
Why can't he do both?
Take over the world by impregnating every woman on the planet.
I feel like that's not really the best way to take over the world.
He's an alien, though.
It's the most fun way, though.
That's
a generation. Can't argue with
that one. Probably not for the human women, though.
That's true, but the next generation would all be born alien hybrid thingies, and they'd pledge their allegiance to him and take over the world.
That's a pretty good plan. Or it could be a possible good plan.
It could be a bad plan. Yeah, that's why I think, you know, this for a choose-your-own-adventure kind of thing, I thought this would be good because it would give pretty much all the control of the story to the readers. Mm. That was my idea.
Who would win in a fight, Alf or E.T.?
Neither.
Elf eats cats. I'm going to go with Elf.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, those are our webcomic pitches. We're going to have a poll up for this going up on our website pretty soon. We're going to take your votes and see which idea you like best. Like we said, around episode 15 or so, we're going to take the poll down, we're going to count up, and we're going to see who you want to see.
Yeah. So whoever wins this initial poll, we'll start making that comic.
Right.
And then at the end of each issue or each comic, you know, we'll have another poll up where you can vote for what you want to see.
Four good choices. Mine's, of course, the best.
I don't know. I thought mine was the best.
I thought mine was pretty good.
Mine was pretty good.
Thanks.
If you have any questions, you know, things that you would like to know about, you know, our ideas that we haven't covered, feel free to leave those in the comments or on Facebook. We'll
shoot us an email.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll definitely let you know if you have any more questions before you weigh in on this very important and heavy decision.
It's, yeah, vote, because if you don't, Will will lick everybody's boob.
That's not going to happen.
Well, I mean, what if that's part of the comic that wins?
Well, we'll cross
Will
that bridge when we get to it.
Everybody's boob. Wow.
That would be a bit of a non sequitur for all the comics we proposed.
Yeah. I think it would work best in Ryan's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just this horrible, dark, noir, murder mystery kind of world.
Will just walks by. Hey, Manny. All right. Well, that's enough about boob licking. We'll be right back after this.
happy to introduce Dan the best man.
Oh, hi, everyone. We're all here to celebrate the wedding of our good friend Bob to that horse-faced slut Diane. But first, I'd like to tell you about a little story about love and betrayal. Oh man, that was so embarrassing. I feel like such an asshole. Bob probably won't ever speak to me again. And Diane was so offended that she punched me in the face. And she's a pacifist. Oh, I'll regret what I do for the rest of my life.
Cheer up, kid. We all do things we regret. It's a part of life and there's no use dwelling on it. After all, you can't change the past. Or can you?
What do you mean, Big Al?
I mean, why not hire Big Al's Quantum Quick Fix to go back in time and fix it? Here, let's see how that scene might have played out with one of Big Al's temporal repair professionals involved.
And now I'm happy to introduce Dan the best man.
Oh boy.
Listen to me, Sam. Your name is Dan Penisinder. You're at your best friend Bob's wedding, and you've got to make a toast. Now, Dan acted like a real nozzle in the original history, so you've got to knock this one out of the park.
All right. What can I say to my best friend Bob and his beautiful bride...
Diane,
on their wedding day, except you two look great together. As Will Shakespeare might have put it, love is not love which alters when it alters...
Wow. I'm still getting compliments on that speech I made, and I don't even remember what I said. Thanks, Big Al.
No problemo, kid. That's what we're here for. Big Al's Quantum Quick Fix is the world's leading provider of temporal revision services. Just send $50, cash check, or money order to P.O. Box 114-C, Stallions Gate, New Mexico, along with a brief description of what went wrong, when and where it happened, and how we can help. One of our highly trained time travelers will be dispatched to set the record straight for you. And that's a Big Al's guarantee.
Disclaimer, Big Al's Quantum Quick Fix is not responsible for persons, events, or objects that are accidentally deleted from history. Due to the changing nature of the space-time continuum, refunds may only be available to those customers who retain their memories of contacting us.
We'll put right what once went wrong. For you.
Alright, welcome back everyone, and unfortunately that does bring another episode of Ragnar Rock to a close.
No.
This has been episode 13, The Rise of Indie Games, or The Chasm of Lord Zardak.
Speaking of which, actually, we do have to wrap this up, because I have an appointment with the Housing Authority for the apartment complex and Lord Zardak's Chasm.
Alright, I'll try to make this quick.
I have to get there.
It's been actually a fun podcast in this chasm. It's nice and roomy. It's a little dark, but it's pretty nice.
I'm a little offended by the lack of plumbing.
Really?
Apparently they haven't been zoned for plumbing in the chasm yet. Hmm.
Well, I gotta say, though, the cell phone reception is great. Mm-hmm. Surprising.
He's Zardak's a hospitable host.
Yeah.
He's been good to us.
He has thrown us a few goats from the top of the chasm.
There could be worse.
I didn't even know what a chasm was until we went here.
There are definitely worse chasms to be stuck in, I have to say.
Oh, don't forget about Queen Bragmire's crag.
I didn't like her.
She was not good to us.
Queen Bagmire.
That was a terrible name, so why didn't
you and Duke Footwhistles Ravine.
We work on the cusp here.
Yes. Yeah, Queen Bagmire was not good.
Off the cuff is
in many, many ways. Many, many ways. Anyway.
See all a right. bag and
we're professionals here.
Together. I don't really know how my brain joined those two together.
So if you want to hear more of this, you can hit us up at our website, www.ragnardrock.com. You can find us on Twitter, @ragnardrock. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/ Ragnardrock, surprise, surprise. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also contact us directly. We have an email that we would like to get your emails in That's info@ragnarok.com.
We have an email. We want to get your emails in.
You put the emails in the emails.
I did just say Queen Bagmire, so I'm not really in a position to criticize right now.
You can also leave us a voicemail. Actually, we have a phone number set up. That's 516-362-6373. That's cleverly enough, 516-362-NERD.
As we said during our last show, if you give us a call or send us an email, we will send you a free comic book.
So be sure to tune in for our next episode. We actually have a special guest we're going to be interviewing, Mr. Joe Hogan. He's a Star Wars artist, quite a good one at that. And
we're sitting down talking to him. We'll also be trying out some spicy peppers.
You think if I ask Joe nicer, he'll draw me as a Jedi?
Maybe, I don't know.
Ah.
He's
well, all right, then.
All right, as always, I'm Eric.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Alex.
I'm Meyer.
I'm still Eric.
And this has been another presentation of Ragnarok.